Betts walked in. "Damn." "Betts," he started. She interrupted him.
"The Mortimers called. They just got home from a weekend in Lincoln. Home game. Made a thing of it and cashed in some freebie they'd won for a double night stay at a Best Western. Got back this morning. Found someone painted graffiti on their barn. They're ticked. They want someone out there. I'd say I go with Hal, but don't get pissed. He's being more of a dick than normal and I'm fed up with his crap, so just want to ask, can I go alone?"
Butch Mortimer was born in a bad mood, and he was big as a house. His wife Luella didn't come straight from the loins of her mama. She came straight from the loins of Satan. No way in hell he was sending Betts out to deal with those two alone. And this would take some time. Time to listen to Butch shouting. Time to listen to Luella bitching. Time to ask the questions that might give them answers that possibly might pinpoint the actual person who graffitied their barn rather than the dozens of suspects who disliked them enough to be moved to do it. Shit. Apparently, he'd have to ask Greta to lunch tomorrow. He moved from his spot, saying, "We'll both go." She looked panicked. She'd have to get over it. He was her boss. They had to work together, so she had to find a way to make that work. She might as well start now. That night, after they did not narrow down the suspects of the barn taggers, and after Hicks had gone to the gym to work out, he sat at a stool at the bar of the outpost between his buds, Toast and Tommy, watching Monday Night Football on Betty Jean's 80-inch TV. His gut was full of wings and pop, and his mind was full of football, and the lunch he hoped to share tomorrow with Greta. In other words, he was feeling good. Until his phone rang. He lifted it from the bar, and the screen said, "Hope calling." Toast made a grunt. But then again, Toast had had his own bitter divorce from his wife 2 years previously. Tommy just shifted on his stool, giving Hicks a half-grimace that said he felt Hicks's pain, even though he was a confirmed bachelor, so he couldn't even come close to doing that. They'd seen the screen. For Hicks's part, she had his kids. He had to take the call. "Be back," he muttered, sliding off his stool and letting the phone ring until halfway to the door of the bar where he took the call. "Hope?" "Hickson," she replied shortly. He pushed out the door. "The kids okay?"
"Yes,"
she bit out. He pulled a deep breath into his lungs and stopped on the sidewalk, looking unseeing at Main Street. When she said nothing, he prompted, "Right, you want to let me in on why you're calling?" She did, because she launched right in.
"I know you dislike me repeating myself, Hicks. However, it's important enough to me to make one final attempt to ask you to stop this Junk Sundays thing. It seems lost on you that I've been trying since they were born to teach them healthy habits. They have to live in those bodies for what I'm sure we both hope is a long time. So it's important that they take care of them."
"Hope it isn't lost on me. What also isn't lost on me is both Shaw and Core play sports, so the entire school year they're training and conditioning. Mamie is in dance year-round. In the summer, they all like to go and help your dad out on the ranch, and that work is heavy. They aren't sitting around playing video games all the time. It's one day, and they don't eat so much they puke. They just have a day to relax and let loose."
"Well, I don't like it," she shot back.
"You've made that clear."
"They need to be shown what's right, Hickson. Not shown what's right, but there are exceptions. Right is right, there are no exceptions, and they need a solid foundation for that when it's their turn to make good choices."
"Hope, they're not 5 years old," Hicks returned. "No offense, but it's weird, a mama telling her 17-year-old son what he can put in his mouth.
Or her 15-year-old daughter. Or even Mamie.
We gotta loosen our hold and let them make those choices. We can't treat them like first graders until the second they take off for college."
"Shaw has a man's metabolism," she retorted. "But it would not be good for the girls if they got heavy."
Hicks tried to hold on to his temper. "Neither of our girls are heavy. They don't have the build or the habits to go that way. But that said, I'm not a big fan of you giving them ideas that they'd be anything but perfect however they are."
"Society is not kind to fat girls," she snapped.
"Unfortunately, you're correct.
But how about we worry about that if either of them gives us any indication they're going to put on too much weight? She said nothing, and since they were on the phone, Hicks couldn't tell if she was seething or scheming. He'd find out it was the former.
So this is your play?
Hicks blew out another sigh and replied, I'm not playing at anything.
Yes, you are. Making it more fun to stay at Dad's than put up with Mom, expecting them to make the proper decisions about important things in their lives.
I don't let them throw keggers at my place, Hope, he clipped. We have donuts and chips and dip and watch movies and football for one day. Christ, it's not a big deal.
It is to me.
Yeah, he bit out. And you've shared that. I've listened. I don't agree. So we're not talking about this anymore right now, and we're not talking about it again.
Hicks.
Later, Hope. With that, he disconnected. And since he was on call, he not only had to drink pop with his wings rather than beer, he couldn't turn off the phone, but he could turn off the ringer. So he did that, put his ex out of his head, and walked back into the bar to continue with friends, football, and shit food. It didn't occur to him as he did that for the first time since she'd kicked him out, he had no trouble putting her out of his head. It also didn't occur to him that he would not have to go home to her after football with his buds and listen to her bitch about the fact he put down so many nachos and wings. By the time he sat his ass back on the bar stool, he just ordered a plate of nachos and didn't think of her at all. The next morning, after going out first thing to the Mortimers to take their shit that he hadn't yet figured out who'd graffitied their barn, Hicks hit the department. The instant he did. No, the instant he saw the back of the rounded woman sitting in the chair beside Larry's desk, he went wired. Hal was not to be seen. Donna was probably out in a cruiser. The woman liked a desk about as much as Hicks did, which was to say, not much at all. Betts was at her desk. Hicks looked to Reva in the dispatch room and gave her a chin lift before he moved directly to Larry. Larry looked up at him and straightened in his chair, murmuring, Sheriff, this is Mrs. Calloway. Mrs. Calloway, this is Sheriff Drake. Hicks was no longer paying attention to Larry. One look at young, pretty Mrs. Calloway. He was also no longer wired. He was tweaked. Mrs. Calloway, he murmured.
Sheriff,
she whispered. She's in reporting her husband didn't come home last night, Larry put in. She last saw him yesterday morning before he went to work. I've been explaining that protocol for a missing... His gaze cut to Larry as he cut him off. Deputy, a quick word? Larry looked surprised, but Hicks didn't spend time taking that in. His attention returned to Mrs. Calloway. We won't be long. She nodded. Larry got up and Hicks walked him to the back. He stopped them at the mouth of the hall that led to the cells to the back rooms. He turned in a way that Larry had his back to the room and he kept his face expressionless. Take her statement, he ordered under his breath. Get everything you can from her. When she last saw him. How he was when he left. His mood and manner the evening before. Where he works, where he hangs, who he hangs with. His normal schedule, if anything has seemed unusual about his behavior or routine the last few weeks or months. Get his cell phone number. The make and model of his car, license plate number. Get anything she can give you.
Boss, a missing person, isn't it?
Hicks allowed himself to lift his brows. You got something better to do?
See your point?
Larry muttered. It's not that. When he spoke those words, Larry focused more fully on him. That woman takes care of herself, Hicks explained. Nails are polished, she does something to make her hair that way. She's got weight on her, but she's also wearing stylish clothes. Those clothes she's wearing, though, Larry, she wore yesterday. She might not have taken them off. She's been so worried about her husband not showing last night. She might have just been so freaked her man didn't come home by the time morning arrived, she took off her pajamas and picked those clothes right up off the floor to put them back on to come see us. She has the remnants of yesterday's makeup on. She hasn't done anything to her hair, not even brushed it. Just shoved it back in that ponytail before she came here. And her eyes are dilated, which is an indication of panic or anxiety. He got closer to his deputy and laid it out. Her husband comes home, Larry. She's not here because he's in the Dansboro Motel with his piece on the side, and she's fed up with putting up with it and wants to make a point. She's not here because they've been having serious issues, he's over it and he took off. She's here because her husband comes home every night, and last night,
he didn't come home.
Right, boss,
Larry whispered. Go get everything you can out of her.
Right, boss,
Larry repeated on a nod, turned and took off. Hicks watched him and then he moved to Betts's desk, which was behind Larry's. He bent slightly to her and said quietly,
Listen in. Take notes. Be alert. You don't have to hide it. We want Mrs. Calloway to know we're taking her concerns seriously. Then be ready. We got a man to find.
She stared up at him with wide eyes and nodded before she grabbed her notepad. Hicks didn't want to. He wanted to listen in. He wanted to make sure all the right questions were asked. No time was wasted. The interview was thorough and concise. And he was torn about the decision he made. But he not only had to let his deputies know he trusted them when serious shit hit, he had to let his citizens know he trusted his deputies. So he went to his office, powered up his computer, put in his password. Then he watched covertly as Larry talked to Mrs. Calloway. He'd called Donna back by the time Larry escorted Mrs. Calloway out the door and to her car.
Hal, who was out at Baby Cake's coffee house getting himself an espresso drink that, not unusually, he didn't ask his colleagues if they wanted one, had returned before she'd left.
So he had all his deputies in his office fanned out in front of him, with Hicks leaning against the front of his desk, while Larry reported what Faith Calloway had given him.
You were right, boss, Larry said. He comes home. If he's going to be late, he calls. According to Mrs. Calloway, he's a family man. He's foreman on Old Man Grady's ranch down in Grant County. So he's got a long drive to work, gets up early, leaves early, gets home late, but likes to eat dinner with her, have some time with his kids before they go to bed. She says he's in a fantasy football league and he and his boys got a thing where they rotate houses every Sunday and watch the games, but that's usually all he's away from them. He works so much and is on the road so much. When he's got time, he likes to spend it with the family.
She report anything weird about him the last few weeks? Hicks asked. Larry shook his head. Not that she's noticed.
Their story?
Donna queried. Larry looked to her.
He got her pregnant when she was 17. He was 19.
Larry turned his attention to Hicks before he said.
She blushed when she said that. Seemed embarrassed.
Hicks nodded. It was a good catch. Didn't give them anything they needed, but it gave them an insight into Faith Calloway. Larry turned back to Donna and went on.
He married her and Mrs. Calloway says folks thought they wouldn't work, but they did. They got a little girl, firstborn, she's 8. Little boy came 3 years after. Mrs. Calloway works in the county clerk's office part-time and her husband's ma looks after her boy while she works.
Again, he looked to Hicks.
She says it's for play money. She says he started as a ranch hand for Grady, worked for the old coot even before they hooked up. But even though he's real young, he works real hard so Grady promoted him to foreman. They aren't rolling in it, but they also aren't hurting. But she says kids are getting older, they want to start to take him for trips to Disneyland and stuff like that, so they're saving up. That's her idea of play money.
Another good catch. Play money wasn't nice clothes or new cars. Play money was something for the family. No behavior changes. Hicks gave his question as a statement. Another shake of Larry's head.
She says nope.
Finances? Who does them and is there anything funny? Hicks asked.
Larry tipped his head Betts's way and told him. Betts asked that. Mrs. Calloway does the finances and no, she hasn't noticed anything funny.
What about Grady?
Did Nat Calloway get to work yesterday?
Hicks pressed on.
Larry nodded. And when he didn't come home, Mrs. Calloway called him. Grady told her Calloway came, did his thing, left at around 6, which was usual. She called Grady around 9. When her husband still didn't show around 10, she started calling around the hospitals. Said she didn't want to do it before that because she didn't want to think anything happened to him. She was still hoping he'd just walk in the door.
She called any of his buds?
Donna asked.
Yep, Larry told her. All of them. None of them had seen or heard from him.
Why didn't she call us?
Hal asked. Larry looked to him.
Said she figured he was in a wreck or something. Said after she called the hospitals, she actually put the kids in the car and drove the drive down to Grady's to check herself. She didn't find anything. Didn't think to call us until she got home from her drive and made her second round of calls to the hospitals early this morning. That still got her nothing, and she heard nothing from nobody. That's when she decided just to come in.
Hicks had been right. She'd come to them in the clothes she'd worn yesterday, clothes she hadn't yet taken off. And she didn't suspect her husband of wrongdoing. She didn't suspect he'd been arrested. She didn't suspect he'd been caught in a prostitution sting or a drug deal. She just suspected he'd been in a wreck. Nothing else occurred to her until her worry overwhelmed her, and she came in but did it only to get reinforcements.
Drugs, drink, gambling, they've been fighting?
Donna asked. Again, Larry shook his head. No drugs. No gambling unless his football league constitutes that. She says she'd know. They're comfortable with money, but they wouldn't be if he was doing anything like that. Drink, yeah, but she says it's the normal kind, a couple of beers after work. He likes bourbon, but doesn't like to drink the hard stuff around his kids. And she was real honest about what it's like between them. Said it was a bumpy road at first, being young, setting up house, having a baby to look after so soon. But they ironed it out. She said they aren't perfect, they argue some, but they're in a good place now. Friends who might drag them into something? Hal put in. More shaking of Larry's head. Not that she knows of.
So there's nothing?
Hal asked disbelievingly. This loving family man just didn't show up home one night?
Apparently,
Larry answered. She give you his phone number? Hicks asked. Larry nodded. Right. Hicks looked to Betts. Want you to see if you can track down that phone. If it's got GPS, wanna know where it is. Also want you on the line with Dansboro Police and the Sheriff Departments in Grant, Hooker, Cherry, and Sheridan counties. Give them info on Nat Calloway's truck and a general description of the man. Tell them it's not an official missing persons case, but we got cause for concern, so if they can keep their eyes peeled for that truck, we'd appreciate it. Then I want you on the line with all the hospitals in all those counties. See if they got Nat or a John Doe of his description in a bed. The county coroners, too. And then, I want you to call all the hotels and motels in McCook and those other counties, Betts. Find out if Calloway is registered or his truck is registered. If not, ask him if they'll do you a favor and do a walkthrough of their lots to look for it.
Isn't that a lot of effort for a guy who's probably pissed his woman let herself go and is likely off with someone who does it for him?
Hal asked. Everyone looked at Hal, including Hicks. What makes you say she let herself go?
Saw her when I got back from baby kicks. She's fat,
Hal answered. Christ.
You're a tool,
Betts muttered. She was right. Hicks decided he wasn't going to bother responding to Hal's remark. Larry, you and me are going to go down, talk to Grady, and see if he'll let us talk to his hands.
Right, Hicks,
Larry replied. He looked between Donna and Hal. Betts is staying here. Want you two in cruisers, eyes peeled for that truck, parking lots, campgrounds, wherever you can think to look.
On it, boss,
Donna murmured. Hal said nothing.
Okay, everyone, let's move,
Hicks ordered, pushing up from his desk. They were all moving, Larry in step behind Hicks. They walked through the department, and except for Betts, who hit her desk, they all went out the front door and made their way to the side lot. The county had money, and not much to spend it on, but they felt law enforcement was a priority, even if not much happened. That meant each deputy and Hicks had their own cruisers, if you could call them that. They were big, double-cab Rams painted white with gold and brown stripes down the sides on which it said Sheriff with a star in front of the word, and under which it said McCook County. The sheriff was across the tailgate and the hood, too. He and Larry went to Hicks's cruiser and angled in. But the minute Larry's ass was in his seat, Hicks said, I gotta make one stop. It's only gonna take a couple of minutes, then we'll get on our way.
Okay, Hicks.
With that, Hicks drove the two blocks to Lou's House of Beauty and parked in front of it. He didn't look at Larry as he folded out of the truck. He looked through the window where he saw Greta's back to him as she worked on someone in her chair. He also felt a tension from the woman in the salon and from Larry in the truck. He ignored it, opened the door, and shoved only his torso through. Greta turned to him and her eyes got big. She was beautiful, funny, sexy, and now he saw she could be cute. Lou, he said to Lou, who was smiling so huge it looked like it hurt.
Ladies,
he said generally. His eyes hit on Greta.
Greta, I don't mean to interrupt, but need a minute if you can spare it.
She looked to him at his place, half in, half out the door. She looked out the window at his truck with Larry in it. Then she looked down at the woman in her chair.
You okay here? I won't be long.
The elderly woman, who Hicks had seen around but didn't know, nodded enthusiastically.
I'm okay. I can wait all day. You take all the time you need, darling.
Thank you, ma'am, Hicks said to her and lifted his eyes. Greta? Greta moved on pale pink high-heeled pumps his way. Today, she was wearing a white, slouchy top with a low V-neck, jeans that hugged her legs to her ankles, where they were rolled up, and some kimono-like thing over her top that was black with big gray, white, green, and pink flowers on it. She looked like a movie star out for a casual stroll, the sole reason behind it being having great photos snapped of her by the paparazzi. He got out of the door, but held it open for her. She glanced at him as she walked out, also shooting her gaze toward Larry in the truck, before he took her elbow and stopped her just outside one of Lou's windows, in full view of the salon. Don't have a lot of time, Greta, he told her when she looked up at him.
Okay, Hicks.
She wasn't hiding she was guarded, but also curious. I didn't get your number. I was going to call down to the salon yesterday, wanted to have lunch with you. Something came up. I was going to call down this morning. Something else came up, and me and Larry got to drive down to Grant County. He fished in his jeans, got his wallet out, flipped it open, and pulled out a card. He shoved the wallet back as he handed it to her. She took it. Hopefully, he continued, what we're looking into will sort itself out today, so maybe we can have lunch tomorrow. You can fit that in your schedule. Don't have time to program you on my phone right now. You text me, I'll program you in when I got a second, and then I can call you direct. She was staring up at him, lips parted. Now I gotta go, he said.
Right,
she whispered. Lunch tomorrow if we can, yeah? She stared some more, seemed to pull herself out of it, and a small smile hit her face.
Yeah, Hickson, definitely.
He nodded to her, wanting to smile back, pleased as hell she was clearly into that idea. But he had other shit on his mind, shit he had to focus on, not doing it thinking Greta may be wondering, after what had gone down between them, why she hadn't heard from him or seen him. He was not that guy who got off and took off. He also wasn't that guy who played games, liked you, but felt the need to play it cool and waited days to connect so you wouldn't know he did. Later, sweetheart, he murmured. Her smile got bigger and nearly blinded him. He'd take that, and keep it as the next hours unfolded because he had a feeling deep in his gut he'd need it.
Later, Hicks.
He shot her a small grin, turned, and walked to the truck. He was starting it up, looking out the windshield at Greta, walking back into the salon, doing it half-turned, arm up, waving his way, looking over her shoulder, still smiling that smile. He lifted up his chin to her, and as the door closed, his eyes moved to the rearview mirror, and he started backing out into Main Street. Don't get pissed at me when I point out that woman is fine, Larry remarked. Hicks replied. There was silence as Hicks put her in drive and started them on their way. Three blocks in, Larry said quietly, good for you, man. Good for you. We're just friends. Like I said, good for you, man. And I don't mean that snarky, Hicks. She's pretty. Looks sweet, great fucking smile. Friend or whatever. After what you've been through, you deserve a smile like that aimed your way. So good for you. Hicks didn't reply, but Larry was right. More than just Greta's smile was good for him. Now he'd connected with her. She had his card, his number. She knew where he was at. So he could clear his mind and focus on finding Nat Calloway.
Not thinking Nat Calloway is going to walk in those doors, Hicks.
Hicks took his attention from where it was aimed through the windows of dispatch to the outside windows facing the street and looked at Ida, who took over Reva during the nighttime dispatch shift, 3 to 11. Dispatch wasn't McCook County Sheriff's dispatch. They didn't have enough going on to have their own dispatch. It was McCook County everything dispatch. Sheriff, fire, emergency, and a couple of hotlines, suicide and sexual assault. The county's 911 number ran through that room so even Dansboro police, the only town in the county that was big enough to have their own force, albeit there were only three people on that force,
used that dispatch. But the county was sleepy enough, 5 days a week, and it was only operated from 7 in the morning to 11 at night. The weekend shift going all the way to 1 in the morning, mostly just because. The 911 calls were redirected to a service for the midnight hours, due to the fact that no one called in during those hours, because most of the county was asleep, but it was still willing to pay for cover. Hicks had spent the day getting more of what Faith Calloway said about her husband, Nat. Good guy, hard worker, family man, loved his wife, loved his kids. Might miss church on Sunday, but only because that was one of the few chances he got to sleep in, though Faith didn't miss it and took the kids. He was liked. Hell, Flynn Gravy was beside himself, and not just because his foreman was missing, but because that foreman was Nat. Hicks had called to know Grady, after Hicks's deputies had been called in by the sheriff of Grant County to assist with some cattle rustling mess that had happened a few years earlier. Grady was a decent man, but he was crotchety. The kind of man you would know he liked you when he kicked the bucket and put you in his will. But he liked Nat. So much, he'd suspended operations that day to set his hands on the roads to see if they could find him. Not one of those men had protested or dragged their feet. They set out for their trucks practically before Grady finished giving the order. That said a lot without using a single word. Hicks didn't argue with this interference, mostly because he wanted that man found. They'd also learned that no one thought Nat and Faith would work out, but he'd loved her at 17, and according to everyone they asked, he loved her now. He wouldn't cheat. Work too hard to get caught up in anything, another woman, booze, drugs, gambling. But it wasn't the fact he didn't have time. It was the fact he loved his wife too much. When he wasn't working or on the road, he was with his family or his football league buddies. Simple man, simple pleasures, simple life. And now he was missing. No clues. His truck was nowhere to be found. They couldn't locate his phone, so it was either turned off or destroyed. Last person who saw him was one of Grady's ranch hands. And that man had seen him get in his truck and drive away. Still, it was nearly 11, and Hicks was at the station. He'd gone over his notes and copies of all his deputies' notes, and he'd done that repeatedly. He'd then gone out to the Harlequin and brought in dinner for him and Ida. After that, he'd hung out with her in the dispatch room, his eyes often straying to the windows, his mind filled with Nat Calloway.
"You got a bad feeling," Ida noted.
"Yep," he agreed. She nodded. "You know the Calloways?" he asked. She shook her head.
"Think they go to the Methodist Church."
For some in that town, what church you attended was the social divide. Ida was a Baptist. She was one of Keller's flock. She was a fine woman, but her social stratum wasn't all that layered.
"We don't have much in the way of this kind of thing in this county. Less a man or gal gets itchy feet," she remarked. "Reckon in the big city you saw more of this. So I reckon your bad feeling isn't a good thing."
She was very right. "Nope," he agreed. She leaned to him.
"It's late, Hicks. Go home. Get some rest. It's as bad as you're thinking, you're gonna need it. It isn't, then you got a decent night's sleep."
It was good advice.
So Hicks nodded, took the sole of his boot off the chair he'd pulled in front of him, and his ass off the one he was sitting on. He looked down at Ida. Round, red cheeks, hair going gray, and she wasn't about to do a thing about it. Something he knew because the going part of gray had almost went. If she dissed Lou's house of beauty and trimmed the long ends herself, Hicks wouldn't have been surprised. "Your shift's over in 20 minutes, Ida. Could wait. Walk you to your car."
"You need company to keep your mind off things, Hicks. You're welcome to stay. But I'm used to the solitude, and I like it. Got 4 kids at home who fight more than my husband and I did before he pulled on his boots and took off. And that's saying something. Quiet does me a lot of good."
Her 4 kids were actually 4 adults still living with their mother. Hicks couldn't figure out if they were sucking her dry or loyal to the bone after their daddy left her with them when they were a whole lot younger. This was mostly because she fought with them as much as she said they fought with each other. There was love there, though. And Ida seemed content. Not to mention it wasn't any of his business.
"Right, Ida,"
Catch you tomorrow.
You will, Hickson. Try to sleep good.
He lifted his chin, gave her a low wave, went to his office, shut it down, shut the bullpen down, leaving the lights over reception on for Ida. He gave her another low wave before he left, got in his Bronco, and drove to his apartment. He threw back a beer watching late-night TV and trying to unwind, clear his head. Find tired, but he was still wired. Even so, Ida was right. Until they figured out what had become of Nat Calloway, he'd need to have his shit together, so he needed his sleep. He picked up his phone first, going to texts and finding Gretis. Now you got me. Hope things went okay with what you were looking into. That means hope I see you tomorrow. That was Greta. She didn't play games either. For his part, Hicks hadn't texted a woman, not his wife, one of her friends, Donna, Betts, or one of his daughters in 19 years. He had things going, but he felt a reply was needed, and he didn't have any damned clue what to say. He'd gone with, "Good to see your text. Things aren't going great, but call you tomorrow." She hadn't replied, and Hicks suspected this was because she was giving him space to get done what he needed to do. Greta on his mind, he hit his shower before hitting the sack, because he didn't jack off in the bed his daughter slept in. So he did it in the shower, thinking of Greta. Then he hit his bed, closed his eyes, and it took a while, but finally he found sleep. While he slept, the rain came. Chapter 10. Really, really bad day. Hickson. When his phone rang, waking him up, the first thing that hit Hicks was that it was raining. The second thing that hit him was seeing from his alarm clock it wasn't quite yet 6 in the morning. And grabbing his phone from the nightstand, the last thing that hit him was that it was Betts calling. He felt a compression in his gut, an acrid taste in the back of his throat as he got up on a forearm, took the call, and put it to his ear. Betts?
Hicks, I found him.
Hicks pushed up, the covers falling off, and he swung his legs around so he was sitting on the side of his bed, doing all this asking. Where?
Game trail some hunters use. Hicks. Boss, shit.
She paused before she hit him with it.
He's dead.
Hicks closed his eyes for only a beat. Then he pushed up and started moving. It's raining, Betts.
Yeah,
she said.
Ran to my car before I called you. Have a tarp in the back, it's a new one, Hicks. I was gonna do some painting, so I bought it this weekend, and thank God I did. It was in a packet. It won't screw with the scene. I took a bunch of pictures best I could in this light and then threw it over him.
Good, he grunted, dragging on some shorts. Now we end this call. Text me directions to exactly where you are. Then you get on the line and you call Donna. You tell her where you are. You tell her to bring a tent, and you tell her to get her ass there fast. Then you get on with Larry. Tell him to bring lights and get his ass there. After that, you get on with Hal and tell him to get his ass there and do it bringing a shit ton of coffee.
Right, boss,
she replied. Hicks kept talking, phone wedged between his ear and shoulder as he did up his jeans. You get done with that, I want you to get on the line to the forensics boys up in Cherry County. Tell them to come down and do it fast. I'll call Lance on the way there.
Okay, Hicks.
Hicks took the phone from his ear long enough to pull on a clean undershirt, then put the phone right back. His truck there? He asked.
Nope.
God damn it. Where was that truck? You up all night looking? He went on.
Yeah.
Good job, he said. Now make those calls.
You got it, boss.
See you soon.
Yeah.
He hung up, tossed his cell on his bed, and went to his closet to grab a clean sheriff shirt. He shrugged on his shirt, buttoned it up, tucked it in, wasted precious time transferring his badge from the shirt that was on the floor to the shirt he was wearing. He hit his closet and grabbed his sheriff's slicker, then went back to his bed. He sat on it, put on his socks and boots, shoved his wallet in his jeans, tagged his cell and the slicker, and hauled his ass out through the rain to his Bronco. Hicks stood under the big marquee tent they'd set up over the body, and stared down at the man who was now on his back. After Lance, The county coroner had done his thing, and Hal and the forensic boys had taken their pictures. They turned Nat Calloway, who'd been on his stomach, to his back. He'd seen pictures Faith had emailed Larry, so he already knew. And what Calloway had, even death and rain didn't do much to dim it. Pretty wife, good-looking husband. They fit. Perfect match. He tore his gaze from the body as Lance approached him.
"Right, Hickson," he started, cleared his throat, and launched in. "Man's been dead round about 36 hours, give or take. Got a gunshot wound to the back right shoulder, another to the back of his neck, which unfortunately went through and through, and part of what it went through was his jugular. Bled out fast. Reckon you figured this out already, but that didn't happen here. This is the dump site. Crime scene is somewhere else, and..."
He looked to the ceiling of the tent, indicating without words how unlikely what he said next was now going to be before he aimed his eyes back at Hicks.
"There'll be a goodly amount of blood."
Hicks nodded. Lance kept going.
"Gunshot isn't at close range. My guess, this man was running away from the shooter, and the shooter was either a good shot and was aiming to kill, or he got lucky or seriously unlucky, depending on what he wanted to go down. Shoulder hit and a rip in his shirt at his right biceps that looks like a bullet went through it, but didn't hit flesh, says it's the last. No other indications on the body how many shots were fired. But right now, it's looking like at least three."
Hicks nodded again and told Lance something he knew. "Man's wallet is in his jeans. Money in his wallet. This wasn't a robbery unless he desperately wanted a cell phone, which our man has but he doesn't have on his person." This time, Lance nodded.
"Nothing to give indication he was tied up or there was a struggle either. No obvious defensive wounds. Maybe some I find after I cut clothes from him. But nothing I can see, so it doesn't look like there was a fight. He got abrasions on the heels of his palms with dirt and small rocks dug in, probably from falling forward once he was hit. My best guess right now, it's from going down on concrete. Other than that, don't know what it is at this point except the obvious, it was a shooting."
Hicks looked back down at Nat Calloway.
"Can't know more until I get him on my table, but forensic boys are done with the body. Gonna get him into town and get down to getting you some answers right away,"
Lance went on.
"Right,"
Hicks murmured. "Thanks." Lance gave him a look, clapped him on the arm, and moved to spread out his body bag. Hicks walked to the leader of the two-man forensics team from Cherry County.
"Anything you can give me to go on?" he asked, even if he knew the answer. He got that answer right away when the guy shook his head. "If there was anything, the rain fucked it up. Got no footprints. Got some cigarette butts and litter, but all we got of that's been out here since maybe 1977. We still bagged it just in case. This being the dump site, minimal blood."
The man's chest puffed out with his big breath before he concluded.
"With this rain, this spot is what this spot was before a body was dumped in it. It's just a spot on a game trail with a man's body in it. We got dick for you, Drake, but we'll keep looking."
"I'm leaving Hal with you to help do that," Hicks told him.
The guy tipped up his chin.
"And you need anything, he's your man," Hicks continued.
"Appreciate it, Drake."
"Nope, it's appreciated you boys coming down here to help us out."
The guy dipped his chin and lifted a hand. Hicks held his eyes a beat, then walked away, turning his attention to his deputies, Betts standing to the side watching. Hal the same, but not close to Betts, as Larry and Donna were in squats, helping Lance transfer the body onto the opened body bag. Hicks waited until they had Nat Calloway zipped in and had lifted the body onto the hand stretcher. Something Lance could carry a quarter mile through tall grass and mud, but he wouldn't be able to carry it back loaded with a body.
"You can hang tight for five, Lance," Hicks called out. "Want to give my deputies direction and then we'll help you get him out." "Thanks, Hickson,"
Lance called back. His team took their cue and moved to form a loose huddle under the tent. Hicks didn't waste time. "Hal, you stay here. Help the forensics team to comb this place and all around. From here all the way back to the road, and don't be stingy about the distance you check the perimeter of this site. That said, this is a dump site. Unless you happen onto where the crime was committed, I doubt the perpetrator spent a lot of time here. If he went to the trouble of dumping a body in a place like this, he's not going to move a man's body just a half mile away from where he shot him to death. There's a lot to do. Be smart about the time you spend here."
Hal jerked up his chin.
Hicks kept at him. Those boys need anything, you get it for them. Mouth of this trail, such as it is, has enough vehicles at it. One of them our coroner's van. Folks are going to be curious. Keep alert. While you're searching, you see anyone is curious enough to come look and you send them right back to their vehicle and on their way. Forensics team finishes up, you get back to the department, and you get all the pictures printed out, yeah? Hal nodded.
Yeah, boss.
Hicks looked to Donna. Want you back at the department. You call all the sheriffs of the adjoining counties and give them a brief. Tell them where we're at. His gaze grew intent on her. Donna, I want that fucking truck found and I want the crime scene located. From what we got with time of death, whoever did Nat Calloway didn't have a lot of time to take him somewhere far. But that truck could be anywhere by now. And I want it.
You got it, Hicks.
You get done doing that, and don't take a lot of time doing it. You tell Reva to watch over reception, and I want you to start combing every inch of road between Glossop and Grady's Ranch. Ask the boys down in Grant to help you out, seeing as there's a chance the crime happened on their patch. You won't find the truck, but you might find the crime scene, and we need that. She nodded.
Not gonna be anything to find,
Hal put in, throwing an arm out to indicate the steady wet that was falling around the tent.
Man was probably done outside, seeing as he was hit running away. It's been raining since the middle of the night. Whatever there was is probably washed away.
We're still looking, Hicks told him.
We should be knocking on doors, and it's Grant County Sheriff who should be doing it, Hal returned. That's dusty road from here to Grady, but it's got houses on it, farms, ranches. Gunshots are loud. People hear them.
Hicks's jaw felt tight. Yeah, and anything left of that crime scene we can find before this rain takes it, we'll bust our balls to find it, Hal. Before the rain takes it. Not going house to house, some of those houses miles apart, chatting with folks while rain washes away a crime scene. We got no cause to believe Nat Calloway was anywhere but on the road between Grady's Ranch and his house. Only about 2 miles of that being Grant County's patch. Got no idea what happened, but my gut says whatever happened was on that road. Regardless, abrasions on his palms tell Lance he fell to concrete. So if we gotta focus our search, we're doing it on the concrete that makes that road. Hicks kept Hal pinned with his gaze as he took a breath and went on, annoyed it was taking time to point out the obvious to one of his deputies. He didn't bleed a little, he bled a lot, Hal, and it was 86 degrees yesterday.
That blood had all day yesterday to bake into wherever it poured out.
I'm not feeling all that lucky right now, but we get a stroke of it, we might find a huge-ass stain. That said, the rain won't wash away anyone's memories. We can canvass once we've exhausted our attempts to locate where Nat Calloway was shot running for his life. And that's what you'll be doing after you're done helping the team. Finding out if someone heard something, saw something. Then you can help Donna pinpoint the site. Hal gave him his chastened, pissed look, but Hicks ignored it when Betts spoke.
You want me on that too, boss?
Betts asked, and Hicks looked to her. Nope, Betts. I want you to go home and get some sleep. Her eyes grew big, then squinty.
I found him. I should be able to...
He cut her off. You've been up all night and a man's been murdered. Your dedication to finding him has been noted, Betts, and it means a good deal to this case that you found him and he wasn't out here for days, weeks before someone bumped into that body. I appreciate it. This team appreciates it. But now I need all my deputies fresh and alert, and you've been up all night. You need to go home, unwind, try to relax, and get some sleep. I don't want to see you for 6 hours. When she opened her mouth, he leaned an inch toward her and lowered his voice. I'm not cutting you out of this case, Betts. We need to find the person who did this, and I'm gonna need all of you to help do that. But we gotta do it the right way, clear-headed and smart. I'll give you your duties when I know you can perform them the way I already know you can perform them. Doing shit right. She looked about to argue, but then she ducked her head and nodded. He turned to Larry. You're with me. We're going to talk to Faith Calloway. Then we're going back to Grady. After that, we're helping Donna and Hal. Larry looked sick a second before he hit it. Hicks got that look. Larry had not ever had to tell a woman her husband and the father of her young children had been murdered. Hicks himself had only done it once, back in Indianapolis. To say the experience sucked was an understatement, and to say that he remembered every second of it like he'd just walked out of that woman's house was not an exaggeration.
Want to help Lance carry him out?
Betz's words took Hicks's attention from Larry back to her.
Sorry?
He asked. She lifted her chin.
I found him. You're right. I'm tired, been up all night. I'm also hyper, so I'm good for now. And I found him. I want to help get him out of this fucking place.
She wasn't dainty. She didn't have Hicks, Larry, or Hal's power, but she could help them carry the dead weight of a body out of there. And even if she couldn't, right then she'd do it if she had to will it to be done. Yeah, Betz was still mostly a rookie, but she was a good deputy. Larry, front end, Hicks ordered, then looked back at Betz. You take the foot. Lance and me'll take the sides. Donna, you lead the way and go at a good clip. We got company at the road. I want you pushing them back. He drew in breath and finished. Let's get him out of here. They moved. Hicks sent looks to Hal and the forensics team when he took his position at Nat Calloway's left side. They hefted him up, and by the time they started out from under the tent, Donna was 20 yards down the trail. They fortunately had no onlookers watching as they got him in the back of Lance's van, though a number of cars slowed down as they drove by. The coroner didn't waste time taking off. Donna and Betz didn't either. But Larry approached Hicks at the side of his Bronco. It's gonna freak her out, Hicks said. But this is an official visit, so we need to hit the department and get a ram before we go to her house. Larry nodded, but started.
Hicks, I've never...
I know. Hicks interrupted. And it's gonna be one of the most shitty memories you'll hold on to for the rest of your life. But she needs to know as soon as we can get to her. And we need to give her what she needs to put the worry to bed and start her morning. Hicks got closer to Larry and stood in the gently falling rain with his hand on his deputy's shoulder. You go in her house, you are not her friend, he said quietly. You're a sheriff's deputy. You're sorry for the loss. You make no promises we're gonna find who did this. You make no assurances that it's gonna be all right, because it's not. Even if we find who did this for her, it's never gonna be all right. She's gonna get on with her life eventually, but this will be a black spot in it, and that is never gonna change. Larry nodded, and Hicks kept on. You can tell her we're gonna do everything we can to find who did this, and you're gonna watch her and see if there's anything we might have missed yesterday. This is not the time to grill her or ask more questions, seeing as you did a thorough job of that yesterday. We can ask her to get in touch with us immediately if she thinks of something. We'll make certain she understands she can contact us at any time if she has questions. And we'll make certain she knows we'll keep her as up to date as we can on the investigation as it unfolds. Other than that, this is the time to tell her she's lost her husband. Her babies have lost their daddy. We make sure she's got someone with her, and then we leave and get on finding the person who ripped that family apart. Larry stared him in the eyes before he swallowed and mumbled. Yeah. Hicks gave his shoulder a squeeze, let him go, and watched as Larry walked to his truck. He swung up into the Bronco. They drove to the department and switched out to a ram. Then they drove to Faith Calloway's house.
Was not wrong about the hands. It was concrete. He went down forward, did it hard, also has abrasions on his knees,
Lance stated. Going through the motions of starting to fall, hands lifted in front of him, but not finishing that. Hicks and Larry were standing in the coroner's examination room with Lance, Nat Calloway's dead body on a table, all of it covered but his head and his feet, his toe tagged. It was late evening after a really shitty day.
Like I said at the scene, neck hit did him in, Lance continued. Bullet went through his neck. Don't have that. Got the bullet out of his shoulder. Both wounds came from the same caliber of gun, which I'd hazard to guess was the same gun. Put that bullet in the system. It comes back with a hit. You'll get the notification.
When he paused, both Hicks and Larry gave him nods. So he kept going.
No drugs in his system. No alcohol. Last meal was a ham and cheese sandwich and chips.
Hicks watched as Lance's manner changed.
Nothing else, boys. Except the man had sex sometime the day he died. Got vaginal secretions and sperm on his genitals. He was dumped face down. Wet did seep in, but not enough to wash that away.
He was married, Lance, Hicks told him. Lance nodded.
Then, sorry to say, you gotta ask his wife if they had relations before he took off for work, but after he had his morning shower.
if that's when he cleans up.
Fucking great. We'll do that tomorrow, he muttered and glanced at Larry. Larry's mouth was tight.
The only other thing I can give you is I reckon you're right, Lance declared. This was done on a stretch of road. Maybe, outside guess, a parking lot. Those abrasions and debris I found aren't from something like a sidewalk. There's too much debris. Abrasions too rough. Besides that and the two holes in him, man was fit, healthy, young. No defensive wounds under his clothes. Nothing that gives indication he was held captive or bound. Nothing under his fingernails but dirt and not a lot of it. But foreman on a ranch is gonna have dirt under his fingernails after a day on the job. So outside of the fact he had sex, had this shitty-ass last meal of a goddamn ham sandwich, and got shot on concrete, we got nothing, Larry said.
Sorry, son, but yeah, Lance muttered. That's all we got.
Larry blew out an audible breath. Hicks turned to him.
First thing tomorrow, want you to take Betts or Donna to Faith Calloway's house. You're there because she talked to you first, and you're her point person on this because of that. She needs to know you're in it. You're her man. You're following through, and she can count on you. You give her the minimum you can to update her on our progress. Don't get bogged down. Just assure her she has all of the department's resources devoted to solving her husband's murder. But if she blushes telling you she got pregnant at 17, want Donna or Betts to talk to her about any activity she and her husband got up to before he went off to work the day he died. You with me? Larry nodded.
He didn't have time to have a quickie in his truck on that stretch of road, Larry, Hicks told him in a lame effort to make what wasn't going to be easy a little easier. And no woman dragged his body from where she shot him and then carried him to the dump site. Nat Calloway made love to his wife before he went to work. It won't be fun she has to share that with a female deputy, but she's not going to be getting bad news that her husband cheated on her coming on the heels of her hearing the worst news she'll probably get in her life that her husband's dead. What she will get, if she gets to the point she's thinking rationally at all, is that we're being thorough.
Right, Larry mumbled.
Hicks took him in, noting the frustration and exhaustion written plain all over him, before ordering. It's been a long day, man. Go home. After you get back from Faith's in the morning, we'll have a team brief and get back on it.
Yeah,
Larry replied, looked at Lance and said. Thanks, bud.
My job,
Lance murmured. He glanced at them both and took off, his shoulders drooping, the weight of the day weighing visible and heavy. Hicks and Lance watched him go, and when he disappeared, Lance spoke.
You get anything?
Hicks turned back to the coroner.
Nothing. No one saw anything. No one heard anything. No lock on the truck, no crime scene found. Rain stopped, still couldn't find Dick. Talked to his boss, talked to the men who worked under him. Talked to his friends, canvassed that road, canvassed his neighborhood.
Outside of everyone being anything from pissed as shit a good man's dead to dissolving into tears a good man's dead, we got Dick.
Forensics get anything?
Lance queried. Hicks shook his head. No footprints, no tire tracks. Can't even tell a person walked out there carrying a body. Rain beating down the grass and game going through that area. Might not be looking for a criminal mastermind, but my hunch says it's someone who knows the area. Since they took him to that spot, that still doesn't give a shit. Any hunter or outdoorsman can spot a game trail in his search for a dump site. There's no motive, no witnesses. My only guess is we can't find that truck. Someone wanted it. But it was a 5-year-old Ford F-150 that wasn't top of the line when Calloway bought it. Not a pimped-out ride that would garner attention or envy. So if he was done for that truck, the person who did it was either desperate, whacked out, or just an asshole.
No truck.
You reckon you got two people to look for? Lance asked.
Person would have to have their own vehicle, and you haven't mentioned another set of wheels.
That road is dusty. But someone would notice an abandoned vehicle, and then they'd notice Calloway's truck if the shooter had to leave it to go back and deal with his own car. Either that, or we got a drifter with a gun who knows the area and is strong enough to heft around a 5'11", 175-pound body.
Lance's attention to Hicks turned into scrutiny.
He had sex, Hicks. Could be the woman lured him, her man got him, one took his truck, the other took their car. I've learned anyone can get up to anything in this world, Lance. But I'd be out and out shocked Nat Calloway scored himself some, got murdered after he did the deed, and got his cheating ass dumped in his own town.
We spent all day yesterday essentially investigating that man, and there wasn't even a hint he had that in him. And we checked all that road, but if I had to wager, he was done close to Glossop. So for the sake of time and convenience, he was dumped just outside of Glossop. But bottom line, there simply wasn't enough time for him to get his rocks off and then get himself dead. So he was murdered close to home, unless the killer knew him, and out of some act of remorse dumped him close to home. Or the murderer didn't mean to kill him, and again, out of an act of remorse, dumped him in a place he'd be found. But I'd stake my badge on the fact no woman was involved. That happens, Lance noted. That kind of act of remorse. Yep. And since we got nothing, we've got nothing we can rule out. Lance looked to the table and back to Hicks. This man a man who'd stop for someone who looked like they needed some help? He asked. Yep, Hicks answered. So you gotta find that truck, Lance said quietly. We gotta find that fucking truck, Hicks replied. Lance tipped his head to the side. Wife hold it together? Hicks clenched his teeth before he forced himself to release them, but still had to bite out his. Nope. This guy's 28. How old's she? 26. And they got 2 kids, 8 and 5. Shit, Lance muttered. Yeah, Hicks agreed. She got kin close? Hicks nodded. Her sister, his sister and brother, all their folks. Before Larry and I left, his mother was there. As we were walking out, the rest were descending. Least she's got support, Lance muttered. Least she's got that. Lance held his eyes. Something'll break, Hickson. Hicks had worked as a detective for 2 years in crimes against persons in Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. He and his partner had a good close rate. They also had cases they couldn't solve. And from that first look he had of Faith Calloway's face while she was sitting next to Larry's desk yesterday, Hicks knew the sour feeling in his gut was not only about what they were going to find when they found Nat Calloway. It was the feeling that this was what they were going to get. What appeared to be a random crime on a lonely stretch of road, the only reason behind it being stealing a man's truck. They had that rain that likely washed away evidence, and time was not on their side. Unless the person who did it felt compelled to walk into the station and make a confession, Hicks had a very bad feeling that nothing was going to break in this case. He had 4 people on it all day, 5 when Betts came back to them, a forensics team, a coroner who'd already done his autopsy, and they didn't have a single lead. They had no crime scene, no shell casings, no witnesses, 1 bullet, a dump site, and a victim that it would seem no one had a single reason to want dead. Something'll break, Hicks, Lance repeated into Hicks's thoughts, doing it more firmly this time. And Hicks focused on him again. We'll work to that, Hicks told him. No, you will. Now, like you said to your deputy, it's been a long day. Go home, face this head on tomorrow, Lance replied. Hicks gave him a nod, a low wave, and murmured, thanks, Lance. Lance nodded back. Hicks went out to his Ram, drove it to the station, parked it next to his Bronco, and went in. Ida was in dispatch. He greeted her by lifting a hand and flicking out 2 fingers before he went right back to his office. He'd ordered all his deputies home for a good night's sleep, so the place was deserted. Lights on in his office as he'd left them. The rest of the lights were out, outside the ones they were always left on over reception. He sat at his desk, opened a file on it, and spread out the photos Hal had printed out. He looked them over. He looked them over again. He studied each one from corner to corner. Then he stood up, bent over them, unfocused his gaze, and stared at them all at once. Nothing jumped out at him. They were just photos of a man, clothes and hair wet, face down, head turned to his left, right arm cocked and up, left arm caught under him, both legs arranged haphazardly like he'd fallen. Put a hand out to stop his fall, but hit his head and went unconscious. But he hadn't fallen, and he wasn't unconscious. He'd been tossed, and he was dead. Maybe the person carrying him had Nat Calloway's right wrist held by his hand, which was why it was flung out. He couldn't know, unless he had the man who did it in front of him to ask. And if he had that man, that wouldn't be a question he'd ask.
No pictures like that tell stories to men like you, Ida said quietly from the door. and Hicks lifted his gaze to her.
But you've been in here an hour, Hicks, so I reckon they aren't talking. Maybe you need to give them some time. Look at them in the morning, and maybe they'll be ready to tell their tale.
That's my hope, Ida. But my concern is they want to keep their secrets, and I gotta find some way to pull them loose.
Maybe you should do it when you don't look like you've been hit by a truck, she suggested.
More good advice from Ida. Yeah, he replied. She tipped her head toward the bullpen.
Gotta get back.
Before you go, he called as she made her start to turn.
Town talking?
She nodded.
Word's definitely out. Shock, whispers, sadness, even if they don't know the family. We're not used to this here in Glossop. Tara from the guide called. Twice. Me and Reva been putting her off. Blatt came and went this afternoon, said he'd catch you later.
The editor of the paper and the ex-sheriff sniffing around was not a surprise, and town talk was unavoidable. Even so, we gotta do our best to keep gossip contained, he told her. They can and will talk, but my team needs to be free to do the work they gotta do, not deal with people flipping out. Nothing indicates this is anything but random. Nothing fitting this MO has happened anywhere in the state. What we know right now, we got a one-time deal and we gotta figure out who did it. That's all.
I'll do my part in that, Hicks. That's a promise,
she assured. She would. You didn't work dispatch that included suicide and sexual assault hotlines, which meant the training to do all of that without having a head on your shoulders. Let you get back to it, Hicks replied. And I'll say my goodnight now.
Right. Night, Hicks. Try to get some rest.
He doubted that would happen. He still gave her what he hoped was a reassuring smile. She went back to her desk. He shut down and headed out to his Bronco. He needed answers. He needed bourbon. But as he drove, what he gave himself was not heading to his apartment. He headed to Greta's house. It was after 9 at night, but as he pulled up to the curb in front, he saw she wasn't inside watching TV or painting her nails or shit like that. She was sitting on her porch, the porch light on, and she had a laptop in her lap. She also had her eyes on the Bronco. She shifted them to Hicks as he rounded the hood, made his way up her walk, the steps to her house, her porch, and as he moved to stand in front of the wicker chair beside her. But once he'd stopped, her eyes dropped to the chair and then came back up to him. He took her invitation and rested his weight in the chair, slouching right into it because he didn't have the energy to do otherwise, aiming his gaze to the quiet street.
You need a beer, darling?
She asked quietly. You got bourbon? He asked the street.
Yeah.
He didn't say anything else, but he didn't need to. He heard her setting her laptop to the side, and he saw her walk across his line of vision as she went into the house. He stared at the street, and then lifted both hands, rubbing them over his face. Damn, he was tired. He had his arms resting on the arm of the chair when she came back out. He lifted one hand to take the healthy dose of bourbon she held in front of him. He took his gaze from the street to see she had a big, stylishly shaped wine glass in her hand, filled with red wine, and she was folding herself in the chair next to him, legs crossed under her. As he was noting, this seemed like pure Greta. Courtesy so ingrained, she wasn't even going to make him drink alone. Once she'd settled, her attention came right to him.
Faith is one of my clients, she said softly.
Right, he muttered.
So, I've seen some cop shows, and my guess is you can't talk about it, she noted,
still giving him the soft.
No, Greta, I can't talk about it.
Don't need to, baby, she whispered. Written all over you that you've had the definition of a really, really bad day.
Yes, sweetheart, he confirmed. I've had a really, really bad day.
She leaned toward him, reaching out and wrapping her fingers around his biceps, giving him a comforting squeeze before she let him go and sat back. When she moved away from him, abruptly he announced, "Told you I didn't want to move from Indy."
Yeah, you told me that,
she replied. This is a good place to raise kids, he shared.
I can totally see that.
Man like me, the job I do, though, it doesn't offer much. She twisted in her seat, so she was faced more his way. Kept her gaze on him, all this telling him she was listening. "I don't want crime. No one wants crime," he stated.
"No," she said. "No one wants that."
"But this is what I do. It's what I know. It's what I wanted to do since I was a kid." She nodded encouragingly. "And here, it didn't feel like I was doing much to help. Not anybody. Not anything that was worthwhile, 'cause I gotta admit, I don't really give a shit who graffitied the Mortimer's barn. They aren't gang tags. Those two make a habit out of pissing people off. They're mean as snakes. Hell, a couple of months ago, Luella shot her neighbor's dog when he got loose and made his way on their land."
"Oh my God," she breathed.
"Dog survived," he told her. "But the vet bills were astronomical. They refused to pay him. Nothing I could do about that. Their land. They got chickens. That coop is more fortified than Fort Knox, and the dog was nowhere near it when she shot it. But she defends herself by saying she's defending part of their livelihood by discharging a firearm. I got no recourse. But that's who they are. And you're like that, people in these parts aren't gonna feel a lot of kindness for you. What they're gonna do is maybe get up the nerve to piss you off right back by spray painting unflattering stick figures of you on the side of your barn while you're away for the weekend."
"Mm-hmm,"
she murmured. "But that's my job in these parts," he told her. "Finding you did it, and taking it as far as the Mortimers use the law to make me take it, which with those two will be as far as the law will allow me to go."
"Hicks,"
she whispered, but said no more. So Hicks kept right on talking. "Felt now for years that I was irrelevant. Experience I had, skills I got, and my job is about being up in some man's face for spending too much time with his bottle of Jim Beam and not enough keeping track of his cows."
"You're not irrelevant."
"No. And now a man's dead, and his 5-year-old son is probably not going to remember him much when he grows older, and it's been made clear in the ugliest of ways that I'd sure as fuck rather be talking to owners of stores across the county about spray paint purchases. I'm also a dick for not seeing that as relevant, no matter how much I don't like the citizens I'm doing it for."
"You're not a dick either, Hickson."
Hicks looked to the street, and did it, belting back half the healthy dose of bourbon she'd poured for him. The burn made the muscles in his jaw bulge out as he gritted his teeth to fight it. But not long after, the warmth hit his chest and gut, and it was worth it.
"You didn't will Faith's husband to get murdered because you were bored, darling,"
she said carefully. Hicks's only response was to throw back the rest of the bourbon.
"How can I help?"
she asked. "You're doing it. Let me sit with you and bitch." She let that sink in. Then she offered.
"Can I get you more bourbon?"
"Gotta drive home, Greta, so no."
"You don't have to drive home."
He turned his head to her again. "This," he started, lifting his empty glass to indicate the two of them on her porch, "is about a friend coming to a friend after a shitty day. It isn't about me showing at your place to bury that day in something sweet." She smiled at him. It was small, sad, sympathetic, but entirely genuine.
"Okay. Though, the something sweet remark totally bought you that option if you want it open to you."
He couldn't believe it after the day he'd had, but what she said made his lips tip up. "Good to know," he muttered.
"You can think on that over another glass of bourbon,"
she returned. He looked at her a couple of beats. Then he looked to his glass. He didn't answer her before she slipped the glass out of his hand, and she was again walking in front of him to get into the house, this time carrying her closed laptop with her.